Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Museum of the Southwest, offering new learning unit by Michael Bauer. Midland. Most people understand how important the oil industry is to West Texas, but some students may not know just how crucial oil can be in their daily lives. A new learning unit at the Museum of the Southwest will help to change that. From now through the end of September, the Museum of the Southwest will be hosting the Mobile Oil Field Learning Unit. Plenty of children in the Permian Basin may have parents who work in the oil field, but may not understand what exactly their jobs are. Executive Director of the Museum of the Southwest, Lori Wesley, hopes the learning unit can help students better understand oil. I think the biggest bonus for us, especially if your parents work in the oil field, then you hear all these words, Wesley said. You may understand what your parents do, but this learning unit gives you the overview of what everybody does. It's really amazing. Run by the Oilfield Energy Center, the unit offers 24 different stations that help teach children science, technology, and careers that are related to the oil and natural gas industry through various hands-on activities. The unit includes a robotic arm, which a museum attendee can use to try and pick up foam balls. Another part of the unit includes looking at microorganisms that make oil. Children also learn about different careers from working in oil. You learn about all kinds of careers in engineering and safety and drilling and hydraulic fracturing and distillation and all those big words that you hear about in science, Wesley said. But these aren't scary words. They're fun. Each one has its own station and has something to do. For example, geologists can use different temperatures to tell what kind of rock it is. We have a heat sensor that you put your hand on, and you can see how hot your hand is. Once a child does that, then the rest of the words you just said means so much more. The learning experience is more complete. Wesley talked about other features in the exhibit. We have black lights that you can see the rocks glow. We also have 3D glasses so you can look into the Gulf of Mexico and see the depths for that. We have drill bits so you can see what they look like and how they work. There's a whole station on fracturing, which is important in our world. I think the most interesting thing is that we have a station that says what products are made from oil. It has things like crayons, Barbies, and cups, and shirts, and all those are made from oil. That's been a good experience. Kids learn that it's not just gas. The exhibit is sponsored by Coterra Energy. The exhibit is currently on location in the Brown Science Center classroom in the Blakemore Planetarium and is suited for grades 5 through 8, even though Wesley said it can be fun for the whole family. Most of the feedback has been from the parents, Wesley said. They're like, wow, I didn't know that. So it's been a good learning experience for the whole family. The Mobile Oil Field Learning Unit has traveled to hundreds of locations across the Permian and Appalachian basins. The goal of the unit is to offer students the chance to learn about STEM concepts, energy careers, and industry-specific topics such as viscosity, drilling, permeability, and more. We are offering school tours, so we have a whole curriculum built around this unit, so we're going to give teachers a chance to schedule a tour to look at it, Wesley said. The unit was delivered to the museum at the beginning of July. For more information about the unit, go to tinyurl.com/4xfukcm4. If you go, the Mobile Oil Field Learning Unit at the Museum of the Southwest Brown Science Center Classroom at the Blakemore Planetarium, now through the end of September. Midland Run Crew continues weekly activities. By Michael Bauer. Midland. Every week, runners from around Midland will gather on different courses to take part in different running workouts as part of the group Midland Run Crew. The group was formed back in 2016 by Robert Gomez. Since its founding, Gomez says the group has grown over time and has attracted new members, including Midland Mayor Patrick Payton. One of the activities that the club partakes in is its weekly beer run at Tall City Brewery in Midland. Gomez said the group started originally as a men's running club, but is now a co-ed group. Then it became the 432 crew because we wanted to accompany surrounding counties, Gomez said. We started doing that and got some traction. The mayor, Patrick Payton, started getting on board. But then we started seeing other groups pop up, like in Odessa and Andrews, and we started to make it exclusive to Midland, and we started operating under the name Midland Run Club, Run Crew. The name change was made back in 2019. Since then, the Run Crew now has its own day throughout the city of Midland, every October 12th. The beer runs also began in 2019 and since then have continued nearly every Thursday at Tall City Brewery. Next week's run will take place around 6 p.m. Back in 2019, I was friends with Tall City Brewery guys, and we had this vision because all these cities were doing beer runs, and it was a great avenue to break barriers and make people feel welcomed, Gomez said. We have a 1, 2, and 3 mile option. Whether you run, walk, or jog, you're at least being active. That's what we wanted to do as that icebreaker. It's been rewarding. We're hoping to start memberships. It's slowly evolving. With this, of course, with a sport such as running, there are plenty of healthy benefits to taking part in the Midland Run Crew. One of the benefits to joining the club is meeting new people. There are a lot of runners who came from Houston and Dallas and are trying to find out how to get plugged in, how to meet new people, Gomez said. But Gomez also talked about the mental benefits as well. There's also a mental aspect to it, he said. With running, there's a lot of mental training to it. If you can tap into that, then it flows over into your daily life, your home life, and church life. It allows you to push through those barriers. That mental strength helps create those endorphins. The group continued during the beginning of the pandemic. During the whole pandemic, we continued running, Gomez said. Yeah, we kept our pace and distance, but to be able to combat some of that stuff by having a healthy cardiovascular system and all-around fitness, it's always good. Those who are interested in joining don't need to worry about having to go at a fast pace or long distance. Some people will start off walking, and walking is beneficial too, Gomez said. It's all about allowing that platform for them to feel comfortable to transitioning to 5K. We try not to push any agenda on people who try to run with us. The goal is to make other people feel welcomed. It's mainly us supporting others to help achieve their goals, Gomez said. Everyone has their goals, and they want to achieve their goals. As a community of runners, we want to help them achieve that through encouragement and through connection. That certainly helps. If you're running with your group, it gives you that extra boost to know that someone has your back. That's something we provide. But we create so many friendships outside of the club that we're meeting up afterwards, and friendships that we might not have had. It's really beneficial in that sense. It's really grown. For Gomez, who is a Midland High graduate, he actually didn't start running until after high school. I actually got started later in life, Gomez said. I had a family and everything. It was about 2013 when my daughter was at the elementary and they had an after-school running program. She started running that after-school program in 2013. I was overweight. I was about 210 pounds, and I could not keep up with my little girl. And I was thinking this wasn't right. That's when I started my journey. It was an 8-week program that led to their first 5K. I would run with them and do my own workout. I went from 210 to 180. I lost 30 pounds, and that was my first 5K. I ran about a 7-minute pace. I got third, and that's what struck my chord. I realized that if I can put in all the dedication and everything, I can really do something. And that's where I started my journey. The group also meets on other days of the week, including Tuesdays and Saturdays. Tuesdays is Track Tuesdays, in which we do speed intervals and things like that, Gomez said. Thursdays, we do 6 miles before 6 a.m. That's kind of our tempo day. Saturdays are our long runs. Depending on what people are training for, it can be multiple places. Anywhere from 10 miles plus is what we typically do. But it's here in town. Sometimes we'll do trail runs in Big Spring. For more information about Midland Run Crew, visit tinyurl.com/3DFZCAAC. If you go, Midland Run Crew Beer Runs, 6 p.m. every Thursday at Tall City Brewery. Death notices for Friday, August 5th. Frank Eduardo Franco, Houston. Frank Eduardo Franco, 69, of Fort Stockton, died Friday, June 10th in Houston. A memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, August 6th at St. Anthony's Catholic Church, 1321 West Monahans in Odessa. Father Frank Chavez will officiate. Arrangements are by Eternity Funeral Home of Fort Stockton. Benjamin Orozco Jr. Benjamin Orozco Jr., 34, of Odessa, died Friday, July 29th in Fort Stockton. Mass will be celebrated at 2 p.m. Saturday, August 6th at Christ of King Catholic Church in Balmoray. Burial will follow at Balmoray Cemetery, with Father Jose de la Cruz Longoria officiating. Arrangements are by Eternity Funeral Home of Fort Stockton. Therese Lynn Bader. Therese Lynn Bader, 61, of Odessa, died Thursday, July 21st. A memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. August 6th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Virtual reality camp, a hit with kids. Participants in the VR camp at Odessa College got a firsthand taste of what it takes to assemble a virtual reality headset. The virtual reality camp was one of many held this summer at OC. There were 5 youngsters in attendance Thursday at the Fab Lab. Today, we're assembling a cardboard VR headset to be used with a mobile device. Assistant Fab Lab Director and Camp Instructor Danielle Collins said. It's based off kind of like the early Google Cardboard when they came out with that design. We are also building our own VR games and doing coding and some 3D visuals and stuff like that so that they can actually download an app and test it through the headset. The campers can take the VR headsets home, and Collins said they operate with other VR apps. Collins said this is a new camp this year. We've been doing research and getting supplies and that stuff since the spring, so it's kind of like a work in progress. The idea originated because the kids asked for a camp, Collins said. She noted that VR is a big interest right now. The camp's age range is 12 to 16. I think they've really enjoyed it. We've been working on the computer for the past 3 days, and they've been building their own games and actually going through coding, animations, and camera transitions, and just like full game mechanics. It's pretty cool, Collins said. David Benitez, a 16-year-old junior at Montessori Mastery School of Odessa, said he signed up for the camp mostly out of interest in 3D things. I've been trying to learn that for a while, and I just have to have the motivation or drive to continue it. It can be really rewarding, but it can be really confusing at times as well, Benitez said. He has enjoyed the VR camp a lot and had participated in the Nuts, Bolts, and Thingamajigs camp a couple of weeks ago. I had tons of fun there, and I had already signed up for this camp before in late June alongside the NBT camp. So I was just really excited, Benitez said. Fab Lab director Adriana Moreno said the camps have been really great this year. We've launched 2 new camp types, including the VR camp and our space camp that we did in a partnership with Nuts, Bolts, and Thingamajigs. They're an organization that supports students entering or getting interested in the manufacturing and entrepreneurship fields, Moreno said. Other camps were held again with new project types. Planning for next year needs to start almost right away, Moreno said, especially because we want to really capture our notes and our feedback to ourselves on anything we might change, she added. Creating the camps and making sure the youngsters are engaged takes a lot of planning, as does acquiring the materials. We also create our account, like our entire Fab Lab calendar. We schedule pretty far out, and so we want to go ahead and log our dates down as soon as we get a chance, Moreno said. She added that she always likes to remind people that the Fab Lab is open to the public. The summer camps are just one of many options that we have for people coming to us and being able to use this technology and learn with us. So they are always welcome to come by, check this place out. It's a really unique resource that we have here in the Permian Basin, Moreno said.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, July 30, 2022. Viewpoints. Let's be civil when talking about taxes. Robin Poole, Midland City Council. Aristotle argued that a community requires rational dialogue and even argumentation in order to discern truth and form a shared community framework. Unfortunately, in today's social order, civil discourse is a forgotten word, and we are left with polarizing views and a lack of dialogue. One of the promises I made to the residents of Midland during my recent campaign was to serve with the belief that communication is paramount. I truly believe in starting the conversation, but I also believe in asking questions and listening to opposing viewpoints. Fortunately, the Midland Reporter Telegram agreed to let me do just that. At the end of each month, I will be penning an editorial to discuss the pressing issues facing the City Council, as well as address items on the month's agenda that may require a little more explanation. And while I can't speak for the entire council, I can share my thoughts and motivations with the hopes it will open the door to phone calls and emails that will spur conversation and civil discourse, because in reality, the issues we address as a council not only affect your lives, but the lives of your children and your grandchildren down the line. Now is the time to have those discussions. On July 13, the council began our 2-month budget process with a budget workshop, where we met with city management and staff and discussed the city's priorities and proposed budget, as well as the fund balance and the proposed tax rate. Over the next 6 weeks, the council will establish a proposed tax rate, hold public hearings on budget-related matters, and on September 13, the council will ultimately approve a budget and a tax rate for the upcoming fiscal year. Governing at a local level is unique in that city government is responsible for providing city services like police and fire, water and sewer, and the creation and maintenance of things like parks to the very people we live and work with. These services all take money, and sometimes tax increases are necessary. However, other times, they are not. Currently, we are living through extraordinary inflation and on the cusp of a recession. According to the latest Moody's Analytics analysis, the average American is paying an extra $460 a month due to rising costs of just about everything. As local leaders, we need to be mindful of the everyday struggles that residents are facing. If there are ways we can ease the burden on property owners and refrain from raising taxes while still meeting the city's needs, I believe we should do it. The current proposed budget mandates a tax rate of 36.2519 cents per $100 valuation. This number is higher than the rate we originally heard during our budget workshop because the 2022 certified estimate of taxable values from Midland Central Appraisal District was lower than originally projected. Additionally, Senate Bill 2 went into effect January 1, 2020, and allows any unused increment from the three previous tax years to be added to the voter approval rate, thus increasing the maximum rate allowable. Midland's unused increment for this time period is 0.010479. Adding this to the proposed rate would increase that number to 37.2998 cents per $100 valuation. Adopting the 36.2519 rate would raise property taxes approximately $1.3 million over the no new revenue rate. Adding the incremental rate would raise an additional $1.8 million on top of what is required to fund the current proposed budget. Conversely, adopting a no new revenue rate of 35.5039 cents per $100 valuation would keep property taxes the same for Midland residents. The no new revenue rate would not fully fund proposed expenditures. However, we have a city management team that has diligently worked to build a healthy general fund balance, which we can draw from in order to fully fund the proposed budget. On top of that, we have room to spend down the fund balance even more by addressing some of the city's larger scale capital projects while still maintaining an adequate reserve to cover shortfalls during downturns or unforeseen circumstances like we saw with COVID. Spending down the city's fund balance along with electing a no new revenue tax rate will allow us to meet the city's needs as well as bring some immediate relief to Midland residents. It's my hope that Midland's tax rate can become a topic that we no longer villainize and that it becomes an issue we can address each year with new eyes, able to see the circumstances surrounding our community and its residents, and willing to look to others for new ideas and solutions. If you'd like to reach out with questions or have anything, other issues you'd like to discuss, please feel free to email or call anytime. You can reach me at rpool@midlandtexas.gov or 432-553-1750. Biden economic woes rising higher than Mercury. Ben Shepard, Permian Basin Petroleum Association. President Biden's economic record is abysmal, with numbers set to show what Americans have been feeling for months. Negative, no, or slow growth seems to be the new normal with a Biden administration that is struggling to control inflation, all the while adopting policies that will exacerbate inflation. On the heels of a return from Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, contracting COVID, and in between announcing unprecedented and equally unclear emergency orders to address the climate crisis, the administration is rumbling, bumbling, and stumbling through an incoherent set of hypocritical economic policies that are wreaking havoc on Americans across the country. And no end is in sight. According to the New York Federal Reserve, Americans can expect to see the prices for goods to continue to rise for at least the next year, until at least the summer of 2023, and by almost 7% from current levels. According to CNBC, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen acknowledged the misdiagnosis coming from her own department in understanding the economic scenarios we see today, and noted that she and current Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell could have probably used a better word than transitory when visiting with members of the Senate in June. Well, to be frank, whatever words our officials can use, Americans would rather them take positive action to alleviate burdens that policies have created in increasing energy prices. Or in other words, words matter less than deeds. Because of this failure to accurately understand our economy, we will, for the first time in a generation, see an increase in interest rates by more than 0.75% for two consecutive meetings, and this occurs with consumer prices rising faster than they have since the 1980s. In the statement made this week by the Federal Reserve in raising interest rates, they note inflation remains elevated, reflecting supply and demand imbalances related to the pandemic, higher food and energy prices, and broader price pressures. And speaking of words, while seeing energy costs continue to be a challenge for American consumers and businesses, the president just last week spoke about new executive actions that aim to tackle the climate crisis. Now, if you've been following the administration's speeches, you will likely recall that within the first 9 days of taking office in 2021, three orders in particular, the Executive Order on Protecting Public Health and the Environment, Secretarial Order Number 3395, and the Executive Order on Tackling the Climate Crisis at Home and Abroad, sought to prevent the Keystone XL pipeline, implemented a 60-day suspension of new oil and gas leasing, and a broad pause that required a new, comprehensive review on oil and gas leases. You'd also likely recall when gasoline and other energy prices rose to the highest levels in American history, the administration in April of this year claimed they were supportive of oil and gas development, blamed oil and gas operators and not the policies they enacted. And then after that, just a few weeks ago, the Biden EPA announced the discretionary consideration of placing the Permian Basin into an area of non-attainment for ozone, despite very little demonstrable information. This would place the single largest production area in the United States, responsible for 43% of all oil production and 15% of natural gas, as potentially subject to broad new federal regulations. This administration has also considered prohibiting exports of oil and gas, which comes at a time that American allies abroad desperately need these resources. American oil and gas operators, and in particular operators in the Permian Basin, are the greatest allies in solving an energy and economic crisis that government caused and cannot solve with hypocritical words and deeds. Let liquid freedom bring health, prosperity. Pete Olson, former congressman. I recently retired from Congress after 12 years as a senior member of the Energy and Commerce Committee. I was the first congressman in 20 years to have a bipartisan bill pass the U.S. House that fixed the Environmental Protection Agency's, EPA, misuse of their control over ozone emissions. You will not believe how messed up EPA is regarding ozone. President George W. Bush lowered the ozone standard to 0.075 ppm as he was leaving office. It took President Barack Obama 7 years to write the rules for industry to reach 0.075 ppm. 6 short months later and 9 months before retiring, President Obama lowered the standard again to 0.07 ppm. So our oil producers endured two lower standards in 7 years and waited 12 uncertain years for compliance guidance. That is wrong and unfair. The real problem with EPA is they exist in a bubble. Nearly one half of our ozone comes from sources we cannot control. Ozone from China, Mexican crop burnings, dust from the Sahara Desert, and livestock gas. Yet, EPA includes these emissions we cannot control with the emissions we can control. How can we be punished for ozone we cannot control? Why doesn't EPA include the health effects of being unemployed and having a poor economy in establishing ozone standards? Why do the rules to comply with lower ozone standards come out years later? My bill, H.R. 4775, The Ozone Standards implementation of 2016 corrected all of these problems. It was passed by the House 234 to 177 and blocked in the Senate by the Democrat majority. There are multiple press reports that President Biden has ordered EPA to use the newest unfair and uncomprehensive ozone standards to declare the most productive oil and natural gas region in the entire world, our amazing Permian Basin, as non-attainment for ozone. The Permian Basin accounts for 43% of the United States' total oil production. This action will be a moratorium on any new oil production in the Permian. If you think Mr. Biden's moratorium on drilling on federal lands was destructive and gave us record high prices for gasoline, you ain't seen nothing yet. A friend once told me American oil and American oil exports are liquid freedom. The situation in Ukraine makes those words stronger than ever. Rather than begging Russia, Saudi Arabia, Venezuela, and Iran to produce more oil, President Biden should be asking the United States to drill more. We are the best in the world. By far, elections have consequences, and this November will be a reckoning for liberals who care more about their agenda than the health and prosperity of the United States of America. Pete Olson represented Texas Congressional District 22 in the U.S. House of Representatives from 2009 to 2021. He is currently a consultant with Hans Scarborough LLP.
This is Jane reading for the Odessa American for Saturday, July 30th. Letter to the editor. Coliseum is for quality of life. After attending Tuesday's meeting of the Ector County Commissioners, we have more questions than we received answers to in regard to the proposed sale of our Ector County-owned Coliseum to a private corporation. Quite honestly, it was apparent that the vote was on Tuesday already decided without hearing from citizens. The 200-person-strong board of directors of the Permian Basin International Oil Show, PBIOS, is concerned. We were one of the original occupants when the Coliseum was built in 1954, have been there ever since. PBIOS generates millions of dollars in economic activity each show cycle and has provided generous scholarship donations to area colleges. We are here for the industry and for betterment of our community. Yes, the Coliseum is funded by Ector County taxpayers to some extent, but also receives event user fees, concession fees, and a 2% hotel-motel tax for the operation, maintenance, and improvement of the Coliseum. The Coliseum was never intended to be a profit center for the county, but rather a quality of life service and economic enhancement for the area. While it does need some updating and a bit of facelift, the Ector County Coliseum continues to fulfill the intentions of its opening back in 1954 by serving as a venue for area events and economic development. Will an out-of-area for-profit company have those same considerations? There must be more discussion between the county commissioners, stakeholders, and the citizens of Ector County. We hope that that case will be ahead. Anthony Fry, Executive Director, Permian Basin International Oil Show.
Save money and avoid scammers this back-to-school season. The current inflation rates are concerning for consumers preparing to begin their back-to-school shopping as students and parents gear up for the upcoming school year. According to the National Retail Federation, 84% of consumers expect higher prices this year, particularly for clothing and school supplies. To help combat increased costs, many consumers are spending more time comparatively shopping online for the best deals on necessary items. Better Business Bureau reminds back-to-school shoppers interacting with digital marketplaces to be wary of online purchasing scams and to carefully evaluate the legitimacy of an online seller before paying for advertised products. From June through August 2021, Texas consumers lost nearly $100,000 to online purchasing scams, according to BBB Scam Tracker data. Many of those who lost money to online stores found the business through an advertisement on social media, a common tactic that scammers use nationwide. In July 2021, a Texas resident reported $1,500 lost to an online seller who did not send any of the 18 items I ordered. They sent a pair of shoes that were not even in my order and were in the wrong size. Nobody replies after you send money to them. Better Business Bureau typically receives over 1,000 monthly reports of online purchasing scams from consumers across the United States. Since 2020, BBB's annual Scam Tracker Risk Report has identified online purchasing scams as the number one riskiest scam impacting consumers in North America. It is important to exercise extreme caution when dealing with online sellers, even if the advertisement appears to be for a well-known company, said Heather Massey, Vice President of Communications for BBB Serving the Heart of Texas. Scammers know how to make websites and advertisements look legitimate. They know American consumers' shopping trends, and right now, the trend is for back-to-school supplies and clothing. If you encounter an advertisement on social media, be sure to check with the company's official website to verify it is a legitimate offer. To assist back-to-school shoppers this season, Better Business Bureau offers the following tips to save money and avoid scams. Check around your home. Start back-to-school shopping right at home by making a list of everything you need and then taking stock of everything you may have stored in desks, drawers, closets, or storage areas. Some supplies may still be left over from last year, saving you from purchasing the same item twice. Research expensive purchases. Before purchasing expensive items, such as computers, laptops, or a refrigerator for a dorm, be sure to spend some time researching the brand, reviews of the product, warranty, and prices at multiple locations. Universities often have rules regarding the size and placement of refrigerators in dorms. Check with the housing office at the college or university on whether an energy-efficient refrigerator is required or not. Ask for student discounts. Stores and software companies often offer discounts to students with either a student ID or a valid .edu email address. Even if a discount is not advertised, it never hurts to ask. Shop in bulk. If purchasing standard items that are needed at the beginning of each school year, such as binders, notebooks, or writing utensils, buying in bulk is a great way to save money. Shop safely online. If purchasing school supplies online, verify that the URL starts with HTTPS and includes a lock symbol. The S in HTTPS stands for secure and includes additional encryption and security measures than an HTTP website. BBB strongly recommends against inputting bank account information into any website that is not secured. If purchasing from a digital marketplace, take the time to read reviews and feedback from previous customers. The lowest price may not always be the best route. If the company's contact information is not clearly listed or they only have an email as the point of contact, that is a red flag. You may want to shop elsewhere. BBB strongly recommends against using unprotected payment options when interacting with online marketplaces. If the seller insists on payment via wire transfer or a gift card, that is a sign it may not be a legitimate business. Using a credit card is almost always the best option when purchasing online due to the additional protections they have to dispute and resolve charges when purchased products are not received. Start with trust. Heather Massey is Vice President of Communications of the Better Business Bureau in the Permian Basin. Check out www.bbb.org or call 563-1880.
Hello, this is Michael. I'll be reading additional articles from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American Friday, August 5th. From the MRT Business and Oil page, Oil Falls Below $90 for First Time Since War by Julia Fanzares, Bloomberg. Oil extended declines to the lowest in almost 6 months as weaker U.S. gasoline demand and recessionary fears weighed on markets. West Texas Intermediate fell 2.3% to $88.54 a barrel, a level last seen in the weeks leading up to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. This week's descent was touched off by government data showing Americans are driving less than they did in the summer of 2020. Fears of an economic slowdown have intensified, along with the potential impacts on crude demand. Prices falling below $90 a barrel is quite remarkable, given how tight the market remains and how little scope there is to relieve that, said Craig Earlham, senior market analyst at Oanda. But recession talk is getting louder, and should it become reality, it will likely address some of the imbalance, just not in the way that we'd like. Crude has now given up all the gains triggered by Russia's invasion of Ukraine in February. Since peaking at more than $130 a barrel in March, the U.S. benchmark has been dragged lower by signs that Moscow is still getting its cargoes onto the global market and escalating investor concerns that a global slowdown will erode energy consumption. Despite the recent price weaknesses, Saudi Arabia raised its oil prices for buyers in Asia to a record level, a sign the world's largest exporter sees the region's market remaining tight. OPEC Plus agreed to boost supply by a meager 100,000 barrels a day in September, while issuing a stark warning on severely limited spare capacity. The oil market continues to be in backwardation, a bullish pattern in which near-term contracts are trading higher than later-dated ones, yet key differentials have narrowed. WTI's nearest backwardation fell to below $1 a barrel this week for the first time since April, signaling that underlying physical tightness is easing off as the peak summer driving season is coming to an end. The extremely modest output increase from OPEC Plus came despite a visit by President Joe Biden to Saudi Arabia last month, when Biden urged producers to add supplies as part of his efforts to rein in high fuel costs. Still, retail gasoline prices have fallen almost $1 a gallon since hitting a record in mid-June, which will alleviate some of the administration's political concerns. Pioneer and Oxy strike black gold in Permian, by Kyra Buckley. Two big players in the nation's most productive oil basin said Wednesday they made billions of dollars in the second quarter of the year as rising demand and tight supply mostly kept oil above $100 a barrel. Houston's Occidental Petroleum and Irving's Pioneer Natural Resources both produce hundreds of thousands of barrels of oil daily in the Permian Basin, the country's most prolific oil field, spanning parts of West Texas and New Mexico. The Shale Basin is expected to produce a record 5.6 million barrels of oil per day by the end of 2022, according to Norwegian firm Rystad Energy. For the quarter ending June 30th, Occidental Petroleum reported $3.6 billion in profits compared to a $97 million loss during the same period last year. Globally, Occidental produces about 1.1 million barrels of oil equivalent per day, a measurement which includes natural gas. Of that, around 493,000 barrels, nearly half, came from Oxy's Permian operations. Pioneer Natural Resources, which operates exclusively in the Permian, earned $2.4 billion in the second quarter of the year, compared with $380 million during the same time period last year. Pioneer forecasts its production will hit between 623,000 and 648,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day in 2022, compared to 617,332 barrels of oil equivalent per day in 2021. Our ability to consistently deliver outstanding operational results, combined with our focus to improve our balance sheet, has positioned us to increase the amount of capital returned to shareholders, Oxy CEO Vicki Holub said to investors. Scott Sheffield, Pioneer CEO, said the company's strong second quarter results yielded $2.7 billion in free cash flow during allowing the company to also engage in share buybacks. Sheffield said Pioneer's willingness to aggressively repurchase shares led to $750 million worth of buybacks since the beginning of April. ConocoPhillips and Apache continue to report soaring second quarter profits, by Kyra Buckley. Oil and gas companies of all sizes continue to report blockbuster profits for the second quarter of the year as rising demand paired with tight global supply pushed crude prices above $100 per barrel for most of the three-month period. On Thursday, Houston companies ConocoPhillips and Apache said profits at least doubled for the period ended June 30th. Oil and natural gas prices remained high as Russia's ongoing war against Ukraine further tightened global oil supply. While oil and gas producers have been steadily increasing production this year, most have heeded shareholder calls for capital discipline and are choosing to stick with pre-war production plans instead of chasing high prices. From an investor's perspective, it seems to be working. Profits and revenues are skyrocketing, allowing oil companies to pay down debt and send more money back to shareholders. Conoco and Apache announced increases to their share repurchases, a one-time way to return money to investors. ConocoPhillips. ConocoPhillips reported $5.2 billion in profits for the three-month period ending June 30th, compared with $2.1 billion in the second quarter last year. Revenues more than doubled to $22 billion, up from $10.2 billion during the same period in 2021. The independent oil and gas producer said it would also raise its return to shareholders by $5 billion this year to $15 billion. Ryan Lance, CEO of ConocoPhillips, told investors the company's outstanding quarter happened against a backdrop of global uncertainty. The ongoing tragic invasion in Ukraine and the residual implications from COVID have significantly impacted supply chains around the world, with shockwaves driving both product shortages and elevated levels of volatility, including large swings in commodity prices, Lance said. The combination of these factors has brought into sharp focus the critical importance of U.S. and global energy security and reliability. Lance said ConocoPhillips is well positioned to navigate through issues related to the war and pandemic recovery. It was able to raise production by 104,000 barrels of oil equivalent a day, a measurement that includes natural gas, compared to the same time period last year. In total, the company produced about 1.7 million barrels of oil equivalent per day in the quarter. Conoco shares fell $1.44, or 1.6%, to close at $89.88 a share on Thursday. Apache. Apache, a subsidiary of APA Corporation, nearly tripled profits in the second quarter and completed a multi-million dollar acquisition in the Permian Basin. The Houston-based exploration and production company said it made $926 million in the quarter, compared with $316 million during the same period last year. Revenues rose 72% to $3.1 billion from $1.8 billion during the second quarter of 2021. We managed our largest spending categories, capital investment, operating costs, and general and administrative, very well, despite an overall challenging supply chain and cost environment, CEO John Christman said in a statement. In its earnings release, Apache also announced a $505 million acquisition from an undisclosed seller near its current operations in the Permian. APA said the transaction closed on July 29th. Apache shares fell $3.75, or 10.9%, to close at $30.68 a share on Thursday. Second quarter earnings snapshot. EOG Resources, Houston. EOG Resources Incorporated, EOG, on Thursday reported second quarter earnings of $2.24 billion. The Houston-based company said it had net income of $3.81 per share. Earnings, adjusted for non-recurring gains, were $2.74 per share. The results did not meet Wall Street expectations. The average estimate of 10 analysts surveyed by Zacks Investment Research was for earnings of $2.99 per share. The oil and gas company posted revenue of $7.41 billion in the period, which beat Street forecasts. Six analysts surveyed by Zacks expected $6.64 billion. Associated Press. And now we're going to read a couple of sports articles. As was the case on Thursday when we read sports, we don't really have much from the Odessa American, but I think we do have a hint that some football articles, locally written ones, will be coming very soon. They do have on its sports page, on the front of the sports page, a very large photograph in the center of some stands and a track and a football field. Caption accompanying photograph. Work continues Thursday on the new stadium for the Pecos Barstow Toya ISD in preparation for the 2022 season. The Eagles played in front crowds on temporary bleachers in 2021 after the previous facility was deemed unsafe before the start of the season. Pecos is scheduled to host Seminole at 7 p.m. on September 23rd in the first game at the new facility. Photo credit, Eli Hartman. Now moving to the Midland Reporter Telegram sports section for Friday, August 5th. High school football. Smith and Murchison bring tough coaching style, by Christopher Hattern. Will Murchison and Bo Smith have been handed the keys of a high school performance for Rari. Smith and Murchison were promoted to co-offensive coordinators at Legacy this offseason, as the duo will oversee a high-powered spread offense that averaged 46.4 points and 509 total yards a game over the past five seasons. The offense has a chance to continue its productive ways this season with junior quarterback Marcos Davila, who holds 15 total offers from Division I football programs. The offense appears to be in good hands with the 42-year-old Smith and 45-year-old Murchison, as the former had been heavily involved with the unit as offensive line coach since 2016, while the latter is the Rebels' quarterbacks coach and is in his 13th season with the program. The offensive coordinator duties opened when Frank Maldonado switched sides to assume the defensive coordinator role after former DC Floyd White was hired to be the head coach at Compass Academy in Odessa. "It's going to be the same offense that we've had these six past years," said Murchison, who will call the plays. "Everybody in this area has talked about their offense and stats and all that. I think sometimes they ignore our offense, and it's one of the top offenses in the state. We don't talk about stats that much. We talk about winning more. It's going to be the same offense with a couple of tweaks here and there. I think the biggest tweak that you're going to see is that we're going to go a lot faster. We're going to play with a lot more tempo." Smith and Murchison insist that the offensive coordinator title is just a label. They say the entire offensive coaching staff has input on the evolution of the Rebels offense, and that is the way it was under Maldonado since 2016, when head coach Clint Hartman was first hired. The co-offensive coordinators are tweaking certain aspects of the offense. They went to the University of Oklahoma this offseason to visit offensive coordinator Jeff Lebby and tight ends coach Joe John Finley and learn about the run-pass option concepts the Sooners run. "If you're not tweaking your offense every year and trying to get better, you're going to get passed over," Murchison said. "We want it to be hard to defend. You have to stop it all when you play us. That's the object of it." At the Rebels' first day of practice on Monday, it was evident that Smith and Murchison coach with a high intensity and fervor. Coaching players hard is their style. "We kind of go by the philosophy of coach them hard during the week so the games are easier," Smith said. "Our philosophy has always been the more you put on kids right now, they're able to process the game more. We want to make it difficult during the week, so the games are a lot easier during that time. We feel like we're doing it a disservice if we aren't coaching the kids every play hard. That's kind of the expectations that we have around here as a staff also." Hartman believes Murchison and Smith impart their toughness on players with their coaching style. "Arguably, I'd put Bo Smith against anybody in the country on the offensive line, and I'd put Murchison against anybody in the country at quarterback," Hartman said. "They both bring a very physical West Texas mentality. Some quarterback coaches are kind of laid back, not Coach Murchison, and Coach Smith doesn't have a laid back moment in his body." Smith and Murchison had the credentials and had opportunities to seek head coaching opportunities at other schools, but have happily stayed at Legacy, where the Rebels have gone 52-19 under Hartman and claimed a school record four consecutive district titles. "It's a special place," Smith said. "We have people that fight for us in our corner. When you enjoy what you do, who you coach, and who you work with every day, it makes it enjoyable to come to work. Coach Hartman, he's a great mentor, but he's also a very understanding, a very family man. When you have somebody who leads you and has those values, it's kind of hard to leave their side because that's the way you feel. When you love what you do, love who you work with, it's great to come to work too. It's a place you want to be at." Murchison has stayed because he says there is no place in the state where he can go that matches Legacy's community support. The experiences are unique, which include Hall of Fame coach John Parchman stopping by to cook up steaks, and the daily support the program receives from longtime backer Larry Hall. The old-timers will tell you, hey, run the ball more, Murchison said. Hey, you've got to get this ball to this guy. And you're like, yes, sir. Big Spring looks to find QB Make Strides by Oscar LeRoy. The Big Spring football program has made progress in each year that Cannon McWilliams has been the head coach. But don't expect Williams, who was named one of the top 40 coaches under 40 by Dave Campbell's Texas Football Magazine, to ever be satisfied where the Steers are at. I don't know if I ever really like where I'm at because I think there's always room to improve, he said. It's always a steady climb. I don't think we'll be at the top, which would be great, but that's our goal. We're going to just try to continue to get better every day, and our goal this year is to worry about today. Did we get better today? The Steers will certainly look to improve on last year's 6-5 overall record and 1-2 mark in district, but they will have time to replace several key players, such as a 3-year starter, Gabriel Baeza, playmaking receiver, Kagan Mitchell, and productive linebacker, Braxton Pearson. Big Spring returns just 4 starters on the offensive side of the ball and 5 starters on defense from a Class 4A Division II playoff team. Baeza, who recently committed to play at Wayland Baptist University, was certainly an invaluable part to the Steers' success as he leaves after a productive senior year in which he threw for more than 2,700 yards, 27 touchdowns, and just 8 interceptions, to go with 742 yards and 11 TDs on 114 carries. Battling to replace him are do-it-all player and senior Eli Cobos and junior Gavin Padron, who threw for 583 yards and 3 TDs in a reserve role last year. McWilliams said while they also have to replace some production they lost at wide receiver, the quarterback remains the biggest question mark in preseason practices. It's going to be exciting, said McWilliams of the offense. The kids know that we're going to play fast and up-tempo, and we've got to use our athletes to our advantage. McWilliams said the strengths for his team early on will be the offensive and defensive lines. He said that those units have more size than they've had since he's been in Big Spring. The offensive line is led by senior and 3-year starter at right tackle, Nicholas Garcia, 6'4", 240 pounds, is a leader on that side of the ball. The Steers will also run a 4-2-5 defensive scheme to take advantage of the athletes they have on the backside. Big Spring will also be in the revamped District 2-4A Division 1 with Andrews, San Angelo Lakeview, Lubbock Estacado, and Brownwood. McWilliams said they have what it takes to succeed. A key for the Steers will be to stay healthy as varsity numbers are not great with just 31 on the roster early in fall camp. If we stay healthy, we've got a shot, McWilliams said. I think we've got a shot anyway. We've got tough, hardworking kids, and it's a great place to be. The Steers open the regular season with a home game against Pampa on August 26th. To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Hives after Pfizer booster. Dear Dr. Roach, my initial 2 COVID-19 shots and first booster were from Moderna. After reading your column, I chose Pfizer for my second booster. Now I have hives, which never happened with Moderna. Why is this? Have you heard of other cases of hives caused by the Pfizer vaccine? Answer. Yes, both the Moderna and Pfizer vaccine, like other vaccines, can cause a mild allergic reaction occasionally and a severe reaction rarely. The timing of the hives is important. Hives that begin within 15 minutes of the injection are much more concerning and likely to represent a serious allergic reaction. If hives are combined with wheezing or low blood pressure, that would be very serious and likely prevent you from getting another vaccine. Of course, speak to your doctor about this. By contrast, hives that come hours or days after the injection do not mean you are unable to get further vaccines. Why you had a reaction to the Pfizer and not the Moderna is unclear. The vaccines are very similar, but there must be something in the Pfizer your system reacts to.
Employee wants to turn the page on mandatory book club. Dear Abby for Friday. Dear Abby, I have worked for the same company for 20 years. For the last 8 years, I was part of an office book club, mostly because I was pressured regularly by the boss to participate. The members were mostly a clique of mean girls. I never felt a part of it or comfortable, but I pushed through the once-a-month meetings to keep the peace. When COVID sent everyone home to work the past 2 years, the book club was over, or so I thought, hoped, and prayed. As things are loosening up now, though, the pressure is mounting again. I do not want to return to that routine, but the powers that be don't seem to accept any excuse or reason. After 24 months of freedom, forcing me back into it is causing great anxiety. What would you advise me to say or do to be left out of this without antagonizing the boss? Wannabe dropout. Dear wannabe dropout, if you really feel your job is in jeopardy if you refuse to participate in the book club, start looking for other employment. Tell your boss you're no longer interested in participating because reading those books interferes with your personal time, and since the COVID disruption you have developed other interests. Then suggest another person be chosen if a quorum is required. Dear Abby, the letter signed Redo in the East, June 7th, from the lady who wanted to rewrite her husband's rushed obit, caught my attention. For 18 years, I was part of an American Legion Honor Guard, during which time we did more than 900 funerals. I also read the deceased veterans' obituaries. Because of this experience, I constantly advise people to write their own obit. After all, who knows the most about them? This accomplishes two things. First, it greatly reduces the stress on those trying to write one under difficult conditions. Second, it ensures the accuracy of the information in it. I wrote mine 20 years ago. Of course, it needs updating, but upon my demise, there will be only a few blanks to fill in, and it's ready to go. Veteran in Virginia. Dear veteran, thank you for your service you have so generously provided all these years, and for the sage advice you have shared with my readers today. Dear Abby, I recently stayed in a historical inn which had very thin walls. An occupant in the adjoining room sneezed. I heard it and wondered, should I say bless you? The sneeze came in the midst of a conversation I had respectfully tried to avoid overhearing, but which was clearly audible. My thought was to ignore the sneeze so as not to intrude on their privacy. An office mate believes I should have responded to the sneeze. Your thoughts would be appreciated. Being polite in the Midwest. Dear being polite, I agree with your office mate. If you had responded to the sneeze, it would have alerted your neighbors that your conversation wasn't necessarily private, which would have done them a favor.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.